What do we get for that $7,260? Maybe you can't, but maybe there's someone else in the audience that knows the answer, or I sure want to know the answer before we start to approve some of these requests.
I think what you give for that, Representative Larson, is a healthy baby. And
tell me the services that are provided. I mean,
Karen,
does this include the doctor, the hospital fees, or is it just some advice to...
Karen, would you state your name for the record and who you represent, please, and did you hear the question?
Yes, I did. My name is Karen Perdue. I'm Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services. The Healthy Baby Bill is a Medicaid option which the state has the choice of picking up. The cost per woman is estimated to be, I think, around $5,000. That does include prenatal care as well as the delivery fee. And these are what we're asking, what the Gitche Amendment requests is that we take the poverty level for which we can assist women under Medicaid for this option up to 100%. Currently it's at 78%. So I think that means a woman can make maybe about $1,000 and can have assets of about $2,000, which generally is a car.
Mr. Chairman, I guess that is my question, and don't get me wrong, because I want to understand what we're getting, because I, too, support a healthy baby program, but it says provide prenatal care for 120 non-Medicaid-eligible women. Does that mean from the first time they see the doctor up through 6 weeks after the child is born, all the costs, or is it just the cost before the birth? You know, just a simple answer.
I understand what you're saying. Yes, there's a second component to the prenatal package, and that is for women who would never qualify for Medicaid because they make too much money. Maybe they're a dollar over, but they live in a rural area. They're married, because you can only qualify for this if you're single. They just don't have access to a practitioner, and sometimes all it's going to be is enough assistance to get them on the plane, to get them so that they will be making prenatal visits. And sometimes it's going to be assisting them with making arrangements so that they can end up paying for the delivery at the hospital, and sometimes it's going to be paying for the delivery.
Okay. I guess, Mr. Chairman, you know, I still question $7,260 for helping someone to get to the plane, I guess. I guess I'm going to drop it now, but I do need more information.
I'd be happy to come see you, Representative Larson.
Thank you, Karen. This concludes the budget oversights on the amendments, but as far as the capital budget, it starts in page number 41 in House Bill number 375. That's going into subcommittee. Next week, Representative Pashaw will announce on the floor on what day his subcommittee will be meeting, going over the agenda, starting with page number 41, starting with administration and going down. And we'll do that into subcommittee, Mr. Hogan, and thank you for your time today. I do have one bill I need to take up this afternoon. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, at an appropriate moment, I would like to make two small comments on that bill that is to come up.
We'll do that in subcommittee.
Thank you.
Oh, on 370? 380?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, sir. We are in House Bill number 380. We have a committee substitute for House Bill number 380, Finance, an act establishing state aid for school construction, establishing a school construction policy task force, and providing for an effective date. This particular bill went into subcommittee. The section one, it's the legislature to include funding for school construction account within the general appropriation bill, requests full entitled for reimbursement of existing bonds. Section number two extends a moratorium for issuance of new bonds to June 30th, 1990. Section three sets up a school construction policy task force with 9 members, one of which is a public member who will obtain per diem and travel benefits. The task force report is due on January 19th, 1990. Section four repeals section three of the June 30th, 1990. The effective date is July 1st of 1980. Is section five. Representative Swackhammer, would you
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to bring another non-controversial bill before the committee. As the chairman's aware, many people have worked in the last 5 days in trying to debate this issue and try to present to the committee and to the legislature something that all parties could live with. I guess there are some minor changes, as you pointed out, as to what the bill originally was introduced as. I think you accurately reflected the major components of the bill. I'd just like at this time to express my appreciation for all the hard work that was put in by the school districts, municipal league. I could just go on name, but there were many legislators that spent their weekend working on this bill, and this is the product of what we could arrive at a consensus on in trying to develop what we consider a good government policy.
Thank you, Representative Swackham. I did have about seven of you on the subcommittee. Is there any further comments before I ask for a motion to adopt the committee substitute from any of the committee members that sat on this? Representative Swackham, the chair will accept a motion to adopt the committee substitute.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, this committee substitute has been adopted. What happened to Mr. Hogan? Did he want to speak on this one? Then I'm going to ask the department to come up next and speak on it. Mr. Hogan, we just adopted a committee substitute that has been worked on.
Mr. Chairman, Jay Hogan, Director of Budget Review. I just saw the committee substitute. I think it's exactly along the line that we were discussing. Deals with a major problem area and proposes kind of rational way to deal with it. I would call to the committee's attention two items that you might want to consider on page 3. Since the act by its own terms would be repealed on June 30th, 1990, I would suggest consideration of a task force report available in the fall of 89. Why? So that it can become part of the executive budget process right from the start. I can assure you that the two task force reports that we have had this year have been somewhat difficult to deal with in the budgetary process because the recommendations are not known at the times when the vast majority of the budget is set. My thought would be that if this task force at least came forward with a preliminary report or better, the final report, shall we say, by November 15th, it would give the product of that, the likely product of that report, plenty of time to be factored into the December 15th budget, the January 15th budget, and be part of the process throughout the 1990 legislative session.
That would be simple to do, is just go page 3, lines number 12, and just change C to read by November 15th, 1989, the task force shall report its recommendations to the legislature.
Yes.
That would be a simple.
And the other question is purely a question. I'm not sure, does the current moratorium expire on July 1st?
June 30, 1988.
June 30. Is there a problem with having this act take effect? In other words, would it be better to coincide the dates, to have this take effect on the same date so that there is not a 24-hour window period when unanticipated consequences could occur?
Representative Rieger.
Mr. Chair, I don't see any reason not to make it immediate effective date.
Chairman, that's the sum total of my
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll take your... We have a couple of questions. Representative Frank, can you clear?
The questions aren't really to Mr. Hogan. They're just in general, I guess, to the bill sponsor or whatever. The idea of setting up task force, I certainly don't have any disagreement with, but I'm wondering, you're thinking of setting up task force this year. The members would start their work now, this interim, is that, and then they would have 2 years to work on it, basically, is that, or two interims to work on it?
A year and 5 months.
Yeah, I guess my concern with that would be the potential for changes in leadership and all that sort of thing. Maybe it'd be smarter to, if we're going to have a two-year moratorium, maybe it'd be smarter just to wait and work on it as an interim project in the 1989 year. Might make more sense.
Representative Weckheimer.
Mr. Chairman, it's our intent, as soon as this legislation is passed, that we will begin to work on the task force.
Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to amplify that irrespective of whether or not the legislative members remain constant, I think that the effort needs to continue on. And the reason why we talked about 2 years is that realistically nothing will happen this interim because of the elections for all intents and purposes. But that shortly thereafter, and certainly all next session, we could be working as a task force, or the task force could be working. I didn't mean to suggest that I wanted to serve on it, Mr. Chairman. But that's what we'd talked about in our subcommittee.
Representative Brown.
Thank you. Did Mr. Hogan wave?
Mr. Hogan left. Yes.
I was just wondering if there's anyone from the administration that could address whether what the governor's feeling is about this approach vis-a-vis the approach we were considering earlier and how it might relate to the school debt funding and the pupil transportation funding.
Mr. Hole, I know you're with the Cooper administration. I don't know if you're that close. Would you come on up?
No.
Could you state your name for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Steve Hole from the department.
Can you respond to that? If not, just say you can't.
I think I can, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, I think the governor's position is that he would have preferred to see House Bill 380 as it was drafted, and the substance that was under consideration. I cannot speak to the relationship between this bill and any subsequent action on any other bills, the governor's perspective with respect to those relationships.
Representative Sweckhammer, did you want to comment on that? Representative Davis?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. When I see this task force being implemented and the sort of the long lead time to get the work done, it reminds me back of when the foundation formula was set aside and we were waiting for information and a study group to come up with it. And I think it took us 5 years before we got anything done. So I'm a little concerned about this long lead time, frankly. And I'm also kind of taking a look at the composition of the task force itself. And I guess there is one person from the department here because it says the governor or designee, which I assume would be the department. But it seems like outside of the legislative members here, there's no reason why this group couldn't actually do a lot of work here between now and the next session. And I assume you probably thought of that and talked about it, but it seems like the weak link in here is the legislature that's holding up the deliberations on here. And I, frankly, would rather see something structured so that the task force could bring a recommendation to the next legislature, so we could deal with that during the next session rather than waiting 15 months. And I'm sure that must have been a topic of discussion. I do appreciate the teleconferences and being able to participate over the weekend, but I didn't participate in those discussions, and I was just curious why we did choose to put it off that long.
Mr. Chairman,
somebody would respond to that before. Sure. Representative Boyer.
We took the, it first kind of evolves from the fact that we're talking about a two-year moratorium. We're not talking about a one-year moratorium, so there's no pressure on doing anything immediate before the next legislature. The second then evolutionary thought from that is that the legislative members are, in fact, going to be embroiled to a large extent in campaigns, and that a lot of work doesn't get done. It doesn't suggest that the task force may not be working. It just begins to recognize that a lot of us are going to be tied up with other business as well and may not be able to focus the kind of attention and energy on this. But I think the need for something to be reported back is obviated by the fact that we have a two-year moratorium. And in all honesty, there's no reason that to move any sooner than that, because there were no projects on the table. There is no district, with the exception of Anchorage, that said that they were even considering bonding in the near term being 24 months. And theirs was very, very, even longer term than that. So there was no immediacy to settling this issue, and the issue's clearly been around a long time, and my guess is it'll be around a long time after we end our meeting today.
Representative Swackhammer, and then Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the response I'd like to, maybe two areas. Number one is that the reason that 380 in its current or its previous form was not the fault of the legislature. It was because of a lack of people coming to the table during the interim and where the work for that bill was actually done. It's through this task force and through commitments by those people that were absent that we believe that we'll have a product by that deadline. Two points I wanted to make also is that there were many people that we were talking about adding to this task force, but the truth of the matter is they're going to be participants anyway, and that was the way that they testified in subcommittee. So we tried to find a balance here so that every area of the state was represented, as well as the administration and the legislature, so that all the discussions were done, we could walk hand in hand hopefully and come up with good options for the legislature to act on.
Mr. Holt, do you have a further response to Representative?
Not to that point, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Frank?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did I note that Representative Brown brought back the topic of pupil transportation, and I'm wondering if you had even considered throwing the issue of pupil transportation into this and had the considered having the task force take a look at pupil transportation at the same time.
Mr. Chairman, it was not my desire to try to address pupil transportation along with this issue. I felt that maybe somebody else could take that issue on.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just bring up the topic. I mean, we really haven't come up with a solution here, tried to formulate a solution. We've appointed a task force to hopefully come forward with a solution. And my concern is that if the governor is insistent upon vetoing the pupil transportation down to a level that he feels is tolerable, then maybe we ought to at least do what we can to work with the governor and find a way of addressing that concern as well. If he buys this approach, maybe he'll buy the task force approach on the pupil transportation, and maybe we can do it, kill two birds with one stone. Because I do think that there is a need to address the pupil transportation in a way that makes some sense, that doesn't jeopardize funding at the local level, but does help us keep costs down. And we haven't really addressed it. The governor hasn't addressed it. He hasn't proposed solutions other than just partial funding, which I don't think is a solution. But I've heard solutions in the past that seem to make more sense, such as limiting the expenditures to the previous year's expenditure or something like that. But I haven't seen a substantive proposal from the governor, the department, or the legislature to keep those costs down. And and I just think we ought to perhaps consider it at this time, because I don't want to be vulnerable to a veto on that area.
Chairman Hull, did you have a comment?
I would defer to Representative Larson.
Representative Larson.
Yes. Thank you. I think, Mr. Chairman, that Representative Frank is correct. In the past, the philosophy has kind of been to underfund it, and by underfunding it, you will bring more responsibility to the local level, and that they know they will have to pick up the difference. The problem with that procedure, as I see it, is that it isn't provided for in statute, and if indeed that is our intent, maybe what we need is a piece of legislation that would set the level of funding by the state and what percentage would have to be picked up by the
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I could respond to that. The trouble to me, the trouble with using the mechanism of partial funding is that it rewards the extravagant spender just to the same degree that it does the prudent and fiscally responsible spender. And I think we ought to be able to come up with a better system than that. It just doesn't make sense to take such a simplistic approach to cost control as that. And if the governor is serious about his concern there, I think we better get serious about our willingness to deal with the issue too, because obviously I think we have less interest in overriding a pupil transportation veto than we do in a school debt retirement veto, and I think we should address it.
Mr. Holt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the record, speaking for myself, I think that Representative Swackhammer is to be commended for a substantial amount of time and effort, in my view at least, in attempting to bring some reason to a public policy which is virtually run amok. And that's my view of the present debt reimbursement program. To the extent the committee is serious about pursuing the notion of a separate task force to address the issue of pupil transportation, I would respectfully suggest that the issues are independently complex to the extent that you probably should consider a separate committee for one and a separate committee for the other. I think to attempt to combine those notions would be folly, particularly given a two-year constraint. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Representative Swackhammer, we had a suggestion for an amendment. I would say on the second amendment, it's my reading of page 1, line 29, that when we say after June 30, 1990, that there would not be a so-called 24-hour window.
Mr. Chairman, I looked that statute up, and the way the present statute reads, it says, or after June 30, 1988, so the July 1st does, in fact, cover that window. That was the point that Hogan raised. And the other point that I'd make is I totally concur with Mr. Hull's assessment that given the issues along with school construction and tremendous work I see having to do with this, that one or the other may be lost in trying to address both issues, that I would rather see pupil transportation be taken on as a totally separate issue. And I concur with Representative Frank. If that's what it takes to get us there, then I would certainly support that concept.
Was it your desire to take up an amendment on page 3, line 12? That would be in order at this time if you'd care to do that.
On page 3, for the November 1989, I concur with that.
Are there any objections to changing on line 12, page 3, January 19, 1990 to November 15, 1989? Okay. Representative Reagan.
I think it was November 15th, 1990. I'm sorry, it was 89. Never mind. Sorry, 89.
If there's no objections, then we will make that amendment to the proposed CS. The proposed CS is before us. Representative Davis?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm still, frankly, somewhat less than comfortable with the composition of this task force, but it sounds like everybody else is pretty comfortable with the way it's put together. But I have a question here on line 6. It says one representative from the State Board of Education. Doesn't really say how that person is to be designated. Is that by selection of the Department of of the State Board?
Mr. Chairman, that would come from the State Board. That would not be a governor's appointment.
No, I know that, but every other appointment says it's either appointed by the governor or appointed by the Speaker of the House. No, is this to be selected by the members, or should that be stated such?
Mr. Chairman, it's my belief that given that this legislation, the State Board itself will make that selection as to which representative would be the best to serve on that task force.
Just one comment. This is a school construction policy task force, and I guess I don't want to recommend any letters of intent, but you do have people from school districts and local government, but there's certainly no indication that the people that are, or what kind of qualifications you want from those people in this legislation.
Mr. Chairman, I think it was the feeling of the subcommittee that knowing the past history of the governor and making those selections has done it very carefully and has reviewed that, so we feel very comfortable with the governor's selection process.
Thank you.
Representative Frank.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I guess Representative Davis has kind of gotten me thinking here. I suppose if the governor wanted to, he could appoint a couple of school district people from, or he could appoint them all from local government as opposed to the school districts, I guess. You're just going to leave it up to his discretion as to whether he wants to have a balance between between the assemblies and the school districts?
Apologize to everybody. Today we are on teleconference. The first bill we'll take up today is H.G.R. 18. It has come out of subcommittee. It's a House joint resolution proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to resident preference. The subcommittee has brought forth a committee substitute that adds another section to the Alaska Constitution rather than incorporating the necessary wording into the inherent rights section of the Constitution. This bill is necessary because Alaska Constitution references to the Equal Protection Clause were restricted than our federal Constitution. It is unfortunate these changes were not incorporated before the courts decided on the recent local hire suit. The Division of Elections has a fiscal note of $2,200. Here to testify on the bill is the sponsor, Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the subcommittee's work.
Right. We are on teleconference. We also have Jan DeYoung, Assistant Attorney General. Go ahead.
Very simply put, Mr. Chairman, we ran this by the Attorney General's office and Deputy Attorney General Ron Lawrenson, and I know the subcommittee worked with Mr. Lawrenson on that. He was here to testify last meeting. Representative Gola has a conflict, and I support the subcommittee's proposal.
Is there any questions of any members? Is there any comments from Jan DeYoung, who's on teleconference? Thank you, ma'am. Is there any questions regarding this piece of legislation? What's the pleasure of the committee? Representative Rieger.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Finance Committee report out Finance CS for House Joint Resolution Number 18. Individual recommendations.
Is there any objections? Hearing no objections, that resolution is moved out of committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome. What bills do you have, sir?
House Bill 341 and 342.
Okay. Let's take those two bills up next. House Bill number 343 and 341 is the appropriation. These bills make a special appropriation of $1 million to the Pacific Rim Study Grant Fund. Is somebody going to be on teleconference on these bills also? House Bill number 343 creates the Pacific Rim Language Study Grant Funds. The HES committee substitute changes what used to be an Asian Language Study Grant Funds to a Pacific Rim Study Grant Fund so the Russians and tag-along could be included in the language taught on the grant, along with appropriation requests as a fiscal note from the Department of Education that request $88,300 to cover department's costs associated with implementing the grant. Representative Ellis is the chief sponsor. You may testify on the bill, on both bills, please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and members of the committee. As most of you know, there's currently a great deal of interest all across the state in making Alaskans more viable participants in Pacific Rim trade. Our governor is committed to that, and a number of members of this body have taken it up as an issue this year. And because of the diversification of the economy and new jobs that depend on our ability to successfully interact with Pacific Rim trade partners, one way to reach this goal, one of many, is to give Alaskan students the opportunity to become knowledgeable in the languages and culture of various Asian countries. House Bill 343 will create within the Department of Education a fund to help school districts establish Pacific Rim language and culture curriculum. And this would be an adjunct to their normal foreign language programs, the traditional, mainly European languages that are offered now in many school districts. The Pacific Rim Language Fund will be administered as a grant program and open for grades K through 12. School districts across the state, some of them are already actively pursuing Pacific Rim activities, but there's really no coordinated effort, and many school districts who would hope to are unable to do so at this time because of a lack of expertise, lack of personnel, qualified personnel, lack of program guides and curriculum, and lack of funding. So the problems are many. There are 55 sister school programs, though. That's a very successful program within DOE, between Alaskan schools and countries in Japan, China, and Korea. And the difference between the schools in those countries and ours are that in those schools, children are learning about the American culture, about American business practices, and learning how to speak English. It's in sharp contrast to most school districts in this country and many in the state of Alaska. As you can see in your packets, Mount Edgecombe, the boarding school here in the state of Alaska in Sitka, has done extensive work in familiarizing their students, and I think they're a good model for what could happen in many school districts across the state. However, I believe a statewide effort needs to be made rather than the piecemeal approach that's currently going on. Mr. Chairman, school districts across the state are in support of this legislation. As you can see from the committee packets, there are letters of support from urban and rural school districts all over the state. Testimony favoring House Bill 343 from private industry has also been received in the House HES Committee and is contained in your packets. I'm very concerned that we get a program going this year and establish the fund within the Department of Education, and I'd be willing to work with members of the full committee or subcommittee to work out what kind of funding level would be appropriate. The establishment bill has a fiscal note of approximately $88,000 for administrative services within the department. That's something that I think is very necessary to get this going. And then the $1 million appropriation in House Bill 343 is for the actual grants. A number of different approaches have been suggested to me, ways to make the dollars more effective, and I'd be happy to work with members to bring that about.
Thank you, Representative Ellis. Representative Rieger, questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first paragraph under Article 9, there's a sentence, Pacific Rim language study programs must be in addition to and not in replacement of existing foreign language programs. And I'm a little curious about that language. There's a grant program, and as you know, grant programs, things funded through grants have to be refunded through grants year after year after year, unless they're worked into a standard operating budget of an agency or the recipient of the funds. And that might mean that they have to figure out a way to work it in, and they might offer Japanese rather than French. And I'm wondering why this language, which precludes a school from getting itself to a point where it's autonomous from having to look for grants year after year.
Through the chair, Representative Rieger, the legislation is trying to get at Pacific Rim language study programs that would be in addition to existing programs, and we're not trying to limit a school district's ability to make local decisions about what's most important to that school district. But in terms of the grants that would be made through DOE if this were to become law, we're looking for Pacific Rim languages to be an additional part of the program, but it still would be up to local school districts. If they want to end current language programs or modify those to free up local, additional local dollars for a Pacific Rim program, they would not be prohibited from doing so. Just in terms of the giving of grants, would this apply?
Yes, Representative Larson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're on teleconference.
I just wanted to follow up a little bit more on what Representative Rieger had to say. I'm just wondering, and I too am concerned about the large fiscal note, but I too am very supportive of trying to encourage the Pacific Rim languages, because I think it's something that Alaska has long overlooked, and there's opportunities there for our students. But I think it would be highly desirable to allow the local districts to place it in the regular curriculum. And oftentimes we organize a little bit how we do business, and I think the local districts could also reorganize, you know, what foreign language. For an example, in the past, we used to have a lot of just Spanish was all the schools had to offer. Then they went to offering different languages as the needs for those languages increased, and is not this probably another example in which we could get this accomplished and at the same time then have it absorbed into the regular curriculum instead of trying to add it on? It's just a concern that I have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Davis, on teleconference. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one comment to make on this, and as under the definition section of a Pacific Rim language, and I was thinking about some of the people from Alaska. Siberian Yupik people went to Russia and spoke to some of their distant cousins, and made me realize that we actually have some Pacific Rim languages spoken right here in the state, and I'm certainly not proposing an amendment, but obviously Aleut and Yupik and Inupiaq, Siberian Yupik, they're all Pacific Rim languages, and sometimes we tend to forget that.
That's a good point.
I just had a question, Representative Ellis, on the 3-year grant. I had some discussions with you earlier about this, and basically the concern that I've heard is that we don't want to start a program that's going to carry on for 3 years and then stop. And were you planning on addressing that when it's in subcommittee? Was that your intention?
Well, through the chair, Representative Davis, continuity is a concern that's, in addition to it not being state policy, explicitly expressed that Pacific Rim languages supplant existing language programs that Representative Rieger was getting at. Another concern, in addition to that one, has been that of continuity within programs, because Asian languages are difficult for students to learn, and you do need a continuous program to be successful. And what we're really talking about here is creating awareness and some sort of minimal language proficiency that will stimulate the offering of Asian language programs, Pacific Rim language programs, in our university system, so people can meld language ability and familiarity with the culture along with business courses in our university, because that's a budding curriculum both in the statewide university system. But in terms of continuity, the people from the Department of Education that I've been working with have expressed an idea about, as part of the grants, in terms of the points that a school district would accumulate to be a successful grantee, that they would, if the school district, local school district, has a plan for continuing the Pacific Rim program after the state grant is over, that they will have more points given to that grantee or to that competitor to receive the grant, because continuity is such a big concern and so important to students being successful in this area. So it's not explicitly stated here, but that's something that would happen in the grant-making procedure and the regulations of the department. And there's a fellow online to speak to that from the Department of Education.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a very worthwhile program, and just as a suggestion that might make it easier to go through the rest of the process, I would like the committee to consider a lower number where we could still put the program in place and appropriate enough to get the program underway, I'd propose that we consider $450,000 in lieu of $1 million. And then, although that wouldn't allow as many grants to be made, it would get the program going and leave open the option of funding that in future years. And I think in light of our fiscal situation, a lower number would have a greater chance of acceptance by the Senate and the full legislature. So I'd like to get the sponsors' comments. We've talked about it a little bit, but I think that would be a good move. I'll make that as a motion, Mr. Chairman.
I'd like you to hold that motion until we have a chance to hear the people testify on this bill. I have two online and one, as the sponsor said, in Department of Education. So,
I will entertain
that motion after we hear the testimony. Did you, the question was asked of you also, Representative Braun, is on the appropriation of moving a number a little later from $1 million to $450,000.
Through the chair, Representative Braun, I think that could be a way to make this more attractive and more sellable through the whole process. So I'd be happy to work with you on that. There was also the suggestion by Representative Boyer in an earlier conversation, the possibility of putting a limit on the number of grants that might be made so that you could concentrate funds in various school districts as something of a demonstration project throughout the state, as opposed to spreading just tiny bits of money all across the state and having very little impact. There's also something I should mention. The Department of Education believes they fully have the authority now under existing statute to accept private donations. If the, for example, the Mitsubishi Corporation or an Alaska Corporation would like to, you know, from the United States or from an Asian country, would like to make a donation to the Department of Education into this fund to stimulate Asian language study across Alaska, they have full authority to accept those funds now, and that's something that we'd be working on to encourage through sister state and sister school relationships. Some of those private funds could well be donated and be an additional funding source for this grant fund.
I'm going online to hear testimony, and I'd like you as a sponsor to listen to some. I'm going over to Sitka at this time to the finest, which I consider the finest high school in Alaska, is Mount Edgecombe, and they have a model for Pacific Rim Studies. I'd like this time call on Larry Roslow, please.
Can you hear me okay, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Today we have Ray Stein, who is our Japanese instructor and also teaches Pacific Rim Cultures at the school, to testify. I had already testified earlier, and Mr. Stein did not have a chance to testify at that time. So with that, Chairman, if I may, I'd like to turn it over to Ray Stein, our Japanese instructor.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Stein, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Am I coming through okay?
We can hear you very, very good. Thank you.
I'd like to address some of the things which have been mentioned in the last few minutes, and a couple other things perhaps. I think that when we have these language programs, if we're going to start Pacific Rim language programs, we have to articulate the programs. For example, we have programs at the university level now. We also have them at the high school in Anchorage, at Mount Edgecombe, in Juneau, and other places. I'm talking about Pacific Rim languages. We don't have very much at the junior high school. We have a sort of a tentative program in place at Sitka High School, Blatchley Middle School. But the key thing is that these programs, if we start them, they have to be able to join and link together with the advanced program so that the students have a place to go. It's very enticing to want to put a program into elementary because, you know, it's easier for the students to learn theoretically, you know, get them started earlier and give them more experience when they're younger. But if they have a year or two at elementary school and then a four-year break till junior high or senior high or wherever, I don't see that as nearly as valuable as getting the program in place with a clear track for them to be able to follow, much as it is in Japan, where nearly every student gets 6 years of English. I think that we have the talent, we have the theory. We have the people that are very, very accomplished in teaching English as a foreign language in the United States, and much of those skills have been picked up by foreign language teachers. Perhaps not enough, but there's a lot of foreign language teachers that that I know of that are Japanese teachers that are very on top of things, that can put together very good programs that will make make Japanese and Chinese and these other difficult Asian languages very accessible to our students. Also, if we think about programs in Pacific Rim languages for which deal with the countries which have the largest amount of economic dealings with Alaska at the present time. I think Russia would be an important language, but, you know, economically speaking, trade-wise, I'm not sure that it is. That's my opinion. I know there's a lot of people that have spoken before that that disagree with that. But the same thing for some other languages. I think the big three are Japanese, Chinese, and Korean. Japanese right now, Chinese for its massive potential and also its immediate relevance, and South Korea for its relevance and potential too. As far as which schools are chosen in the state, it's clear to me that that the committee and the sponsor and everybody is on top of the fact that the schools must be chosen carefully. But again, I think that my comment is that the schools have to be chosen so that they are in a position to send, to send students on to other schools for, whether it's to college or, for example, Mount Edgecombe gets a lot of students from schools from school districts which don't have high schools. You know, perhaps those districts such as that would be good places to get some junior high, middle school, whatever language programs in. Just further to the one other comment I made, this is the last thing I really have to say unless there are any questions, is that, you know, there's so many Pacific Rim languages. I just think we have to be, you know, real careful that we get a good set of languages that we can introduce that are going to work, that are going to be able to give the students a good, solid, consistent, continuous background and prepare them for university, because that's where they're, in all likelihood, they're going to combine the language with a skill and come out with something that they can really function with in the business and whatever field, the business world, whatever field they're interested in. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. Is there any questions? If not, I'll hear the testimony of Mike Travis with Department of Education, please.
Good afternoon, Chairman Adams and members of the committee. This is Mike Travis talking to you from Sandpoint, Alaska. I'd like to provide some testimony as a representative of the Department of Education regarding Bill 343, the Asian Language Program. The Department of Education and the State Board of Education fully support House Bill 343. We would like to make it very clear to the committee that in order for this program, in our estimation, to be successful, that we as a department need to have the personnel and the system that was attached to the bill to be funded. This is of great importance to us, as you indicate in the information that you have in your packet from the department. At this point, we don't have anyone in the department that is working full-time on this language program. However, I would also like to address some of the concerns that have been raised by members of the committee and also by Mr. Stein, who is a well-known colleague of mine from Mount Edgecombe. First of all, in looking at the notion of a grant program for foreign languages and the concern that Representative Reiger had about not replacing other foreign languages building for their program. Capacity building in the sense that, as we see now, many of the school districts, because of budgetary cutbacks, find it necessary to cut back some of their foreign language programs that have been in place in the past 4 or 5 years. So that in order to be able to have the demand met for foreign language programs, specifically in Chinese, Korean, Japanese, and Russian, a capacity building grant program from the Department of Education's perspective seems to be the most appropriate way to approach trying to help students gain some competency in these languages. It was looked at as a 3-year grant program as a way for a school district through a request for proposals for these grants to establish such things as concerns that were raised by other of the committee members at the time, such as where the program should be articulated, what grade level should it be addressed. And other things that are important is, in addition to continuity of the programs, we'd also want to look in the RFP programs, things such as parent involvement and support for the program in that specific language. So the notion here is that a 3-year grant program would be used for capacity building, and after that 3-year period, the district would make the decision as to what language or languages it would wish to continue to offer in school. But it seems because of other budget constraints at this point, in order for us to be able to make these Pacific Rim languages available to students, that this would be a viable way to do that. The other point I think that we'd like to make from a department perspective is that because of the tremendous diversity of school districts and their sizes and abilities to hire staff and develop programs, we feel it's important to be able to have these programs accessible to all school districts. And so one of the things that we want to look at in the near future is how we can provide these kinds of language programs for distance education. As you will note that at this point, the fiscal note that was sent up with the bill does not include anything about that. But that is one of the reasons why we feel it's really important to have a personnel position and support there to help develop the curriculum, guidelines, standards, and ways of developing distance delivery for some of these programs. I just come from Unalaska to Sandpoint today, and while I was in Unalaska, to sort of jog my memory and yours, is that while I was there, there were ships from Russia, from Korea, and all of these ships were there in Alaska for repairs or for emergency situations. And to me, it clearly brought to mind we have in our state for these programs. I would like to say that this is the extent of my testimony, and I'd be happy to answer any questions from you or the other committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Travis. Is there any questions of any members? Thank you very much. Is there anybody from the public here that would like to testify on either Bill 341 or 343? At this time, the chair would entertain a just Representative Davis.
Are we working on this? Is this a draft here? Is this a committee proposed committee substitute? It says Hess, but it's printed on a...
No, we're just working on the Hess committee substitute at this particular time.
Well,
there's no finance committee substitute.
Thank you.
Yes.
I have a question that perhaps before we get an amendment, if perhaps to the department, if they're still online, if there is a proposed amendment which would reduce the overall amount of the grant program to $450,000, would you see a resulting a drop in the amount that would cost the department to administer this?
In response to Representative Davis' question, no, I don't see that as a way of having reduced costs for the department to support these programs. As you have been told, there are districts already offering
Thank you.
Any further questions? Yes, Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that subject, I noticed I noticed the fiscal note has an $88,300 fiscal note for each year. So I'm wondering, if this is a three-year program, does that mean that it would cost $264,000 to get $470,000 out in grants? Would that be the result of that last answer?
Mr. Travis?
Oh, okay. I was wondering to whom he was addressing that question.
Representative Rieger had addressed the question.
And he would like me to respond to that question?
That's correct.
If you would.
Okay. What we were looking at in the fiscal note that was sent out is that the cost for implementing the grant program on a three-year basis would decrease over the three-year period, because here we have the developmental cost of doing regulations, of reading proposals, and doing all those kinds of things, putting program guidelines and stuff. So the second and third year is the administrative cost would decrease somewhat, but we would still need to have the personnel and some of the support services for that. It's my understanding that as this is a three-year grant program, that unless otherwise indicated, I have been working under the premise that the grant program would be at a level of $450,000 each year, and I may be mistaken.
Representative Rieger? Yes. Representative Gull?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did I just understand you to say that $450,000 per year is what would be the intent of the department in terms of making grants? Is that right?
That is my personal understanding. I would like to suggest that you clarify that with Representative Ellis. I'm not sure if that was his intent in the bill.
Representative Ellis?
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Gall, the legislation before us, of course, if the amendment were to pass to reduce the appropriation amount down from $1 million to $450,000, that's all we would be doing in this year, and there's no commitment made or implied to have appropriations in that amount or any other amount in future years. The first bill establishes the grant program, and the second bill makes an appropriation to it. And as I had mentioned before, with the grant fund in place, private funds could also be taken in and expended by the department. But it's up to future legislatures to decide whether to make any appropriation whatsoever additional to this to the grant fund.
Thank you.
It's completely open.
Mr. Chairman, or Representative Ellis, my only question is kind of philosophic about the utilization of these special funds, and I guess I'm a bit biased in the sense that when I developed the language to create the Alaska Children's Trust Fund, it seemed to me that if we could take the opportunity of using, what would you call them, special funds of this type to collect a principal, which would then be invested for the purpose of developing or deriving interest, and that interest would be a continuing source of revenue, could be expended. I just wonder whether or not there's any point in pursuing that. We have a difficult situation with revenues. Puts $450,000 into it now. Of course, next year it's gone. And in a manner of speaking, all we've done is create the shell, and we have to go back to the appropriation process annually. Rather than suggest that I should make an amendment, could I ask you if those concepts have been discussed, and if you thought at all about using this as an investment portfolio that would derive funds for the purpose rather than just simply a holding category, so to speak, for appropriations?
Well, through the chair, Representative Gull, a number of approaches were considered in putting the legislation together. I was unable, frankly, to identify any kind of funding source that I thought was politically realistic to establish an endowment for this purpose.
So you don't want me to amend the bill to put a permanent fund checkoff on there?
That's not a concept that was discussed or considered before.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Larson.
Yeah, thank you. The one thing that always concerns me is, here again we have a 18% administrative cost to implement a program. I know that the program in Mount Edgecombe has been highly successful, and I also noted as backup to the fiscal note that there are no personnel in the Department of Education who can carry out this grand program. Maybe we could get some aid from Edgecombe and help them help us in carrying out this program at a much cheaper price. I guess the second part of my question would be is, if we can't find some ways in which to implement this program without having to find a lot of new money, would this gentleman have any idea what programs we should cut in the education budget in order to fund this? Again, I don't hear a reply.
Mr. Travis? Mr. Hole is here in the crowd. We'll respond to that answer. If you'll join us, Mr. Hole.
No, oh, excuse me. Yeah, I got the wrong budget here.
Would you state your name for the record, please?
I'm Steve Hole from the Department of Education. With respect to the observation of Representative Larson, Mr. Chairman, that is that of using the rich resources available at Mount Edgecombe to help this program, should this program be enacted, irrespective of the level of funding, I am virtually certain that Mount Edgecombe would play a prominent role in the development of programs. In addition to that, I think Edgecombe would be very valuable in developing teaching techniques, instructional techniques, a wide variety of different spin-offs to this program. In terms of the fiscal note, in order to carry out the provisions of the bill, that is, the administration of grants, the awarding of grants, the determination of criteria for grant awards, the development of programs, it's our view that a body and associated support services will be necessary at a minimum to coordinate between what goes on at Edgecombe and what goes on in school districts, certainly to coordinate the administration of the grants. That level of administrative support is going to be necessary irrespective of the amount appropriated, whether it's $450,000 or $1 million. The department's wholehearted support for this legislation is conditioned on the premise that there's money available for it. We're not suggesting that this program be funded at the expense of an existing program.
Yeah, to cut a long story short, I guess I just was a little affronted that someone would say that the department does not have the personnel that could carry out this program. Maybe they need additional personnel, or maybe they would need to switch something around, but I have confidence in our department of being able to carry out a foreign language program.
Representative Gall.
Thank you. Just very, very briefly, I don't want to prolong the thing, but I can't understand that either. Why in the world, if there's only $450,000 here, and if whatever, half a dozen school districts or something are going to qualify to get funds under this program? I admit my ignorance and my naivete, but I can't help thinking that you and I could do that in our spare time. What in the world is involved in this? I mean, a secretary and somebody to analyze the grants and say, write us a letter and tell us what you're going to do? I mean, this isn't exactly like a capital project where you've got a budget the cost of construction. It's hiring somebody to teach a language course. What's the big deal? Why can't we do it for no additional cost specifically? Not what are you going to do with the money, but why can't you do it with existing personnel? I just can't understand that.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, 5 years ago, I probably would have given you a different response, Representative Gall. In my view, and from my perspective, I'll bet 100 fiscal notes have been zeroed out over the past 5 or 6 years dealing with programs not necessarily identical to this one, but similarly constructed programs, the effect of which has been the department has pledged that it'll do more with less. We have reached the point where we can't do that anymore. We have laid off a significant number of folks in the division responsible for this program. the remaining people all have responsibilities. They all have full-time jobs. We have two people now responsible for the entire bilingual bicultural education program and foreign language, to the extent we do anything in foreign language. We just can't do any program development in this area that means anything without somebody who is able to devote a full-time equivalent to the job.
That makes perfect sense to me. I guess what I'm missing, and it's probably because I missed the early part of the discussion, and just say that if that's the case, and we can discuss it later, but what I'm missing is, why do you have to do program development? If you're going to teach foreign languages in the schools, you hire a foreign language teacher and the kids get the course. It seems to me like it's just a grant to the school district to hire a teacher. Who needs the department to develop a program? I'm obviously missing something very germane, but I sure don't know what it is. Could you tell me?
Well, the bill itself requires the department to establish regulations. That means not only regulations concerning the actual grant award process and eligibility criteria, but the eligibility criteria for the programs. There's a three-year limit on the program as to any one grant, which means that there will have to be criteria developed which establish what school districts have to do, what activities are included within the three-year program, how the programs get replicated, that coordination activity, for instance, between EDGCOM and the programs being carried on there and the foreign language programs in the school districts.
So you feel it's naive for me to imagine that all this would do is provide some supplemental funding to school districts to hire foreign language personnel? Because to me, that's all you're going to achieve in the end anyway.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, no, I wouldn't suggest that your view is naive, Representative Gall. I think that from our perspective, there is a good deal more than just awarding grants to make this program successful, and that takes somebody's time.
And I'll presume that's been discussed already before the committee, and I won't ask you to elaborate unless you feel it hasn't.
You may. Go ahead, Mr. Travis. Representative Larson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That sounds like a lot of bureaucracy to me. You know, I taught school for 26 and a half years, and I had to collect information. I had to teach Alaskan history, and I had to collect my own information. And I just can't believe that there aren't teachers out there that can do that for themselves and establish very good programs. I'd rather see two extra teachers teaching than hearing of all this bureaucratic cost that this fellow is suggesting.
Any further comments? Is there anybody from the public that would like to testify on this bill? Representative Brown, the chair is ready to entertain any motions.
Well, if I might, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to ask the sponsor, in reading the legislation itself and then hearing the department's interpretation and the need that they see for the fiscal note, I'm just wondering whether the sponsor sees the same need for that fiscal note and whether, you know, are you envisioning here just the bare bones grant program, which I don't read this language in the bill itself to require the coordination, the program development, et cetera, and I'm just wondering what you're thinking about it, Representative Ellis. Can we do without this fiscal note?
Through the chair, Representative Brown, I actually believe, you know, and I'm not privy to all the discussions that go on in the Finance Subcommittee on Education, but I do really believe that there is a need for some level of administrative support, because we're hoping to do more than just pass out grants, for the money to be actually well thought out and the grant program to be established in a way that really maximizes those dollars. But the dollars just walking through the Department of Education, I don't think get us and the school districts across the state where we want to go. I think $450,000 is a reasonable amount of money, and hopefully we can leverage private funds as well with that. But I do believe there is a need for, I really couldn't tell you if the $88,000 is reasonable or not. If a full-time secretary, a clerk three typist, and the education specialist number one are the appropriate levels or exactly what's needed, but I do believe that some level of administrative support is crucial to this program, because it is, and you know, I may need to have further discussions with you all to go into it more, but it we are hoping to do more than just pass money out from the Department of Education. That would not be the kind of coordinated effort in the state of Alaska in this area that we'd hope for with the state dollars we may expend. And Mr. Chairman, if I could also mention, there is a proposed amendment that's in committee members' packets from the Department of Education. I had mentioned before that I felt my review of the statutes led me to believe that the Department of Education currently has the authority to accept private donations for this purpose. I think that it's the department's desire, if it's the committee's pleasure, to have that explicitly stated in the legislation.
Thank you. I'm going to start with the first bill before you. You've got committee substitute for House Bill number 343. It's the one that creates the Pacific Rim language. And as the sponsor said, there is an insertion there for an amendment. The chair will entertain any motions. Representative Davis.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the amendment. It's located in your packet. I'd read it if it's necessary.
Is there any objections? Hearing no objections, this allows the department to collect donations. That amendment number one has been adopted. Is there further amendments to the bill? Representative Pritchot.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move and ask unanimous consent that we report out CS for House Bill 343 Hess with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
Is there any objections?
Object.
There's a couple of objections.
A brief statement. Mr. Chairman, I favor this piece of legislation, and I really think this is an area that we have to be moving into, and I really think whether it's Korean or Russian or Japanese or whatever, it's another foreign language, and I think we have the ability within each of our 55 school districts to establish a curriculum to include those, and I would just like to see that $450,000 plus the $88,000 go to the school districts to provide classes to the students. And I would think that the Department of Education would provide the oversight the same as they do for Spanish or French. I can't understand what the difference is here and why it cannot be done under the existing program. And I guess I'm just looking for more money to the students. Thank you.
Representative Rieger.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't have a problem with reporting out a bill, but I do object to reporting out the fiscal note. I'm wondering if we could have two separate motions.
Well, the chair is going to call for the question. We'll see how that goes. Sure. Roll call vote, please. Yes.
Just a question. What occurs to me, and it is just a question, not a motion or anything of that sort, is that possibly the fiscal note is really germane in terms of the startup of this program, getting the parameters and the structures in place, and then a year or two down the line, maybe the continuing cost of that fiscal note is an issue. I just mention it. I don't object to the motion to move the bill, unless you think it's worth further discussion.
No, I don't object to the motion to move it either. Just...
Roll call vote, please.
Adam?
Yes.
Boyer?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
Frank? Paul?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Rochelle?
Yes.
Rieger?
No.
Buckhammer?
Yes.
The bill moves out. House Bill number 343 moves out of committee with an individual recommendation with the attached fiscal note. The next bill we have is committee substitute for House Bill number 341. This is the appropriation bill. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that on page 1, line 10, we substitute $450,000 for $1 million.
And you're substituting the language from $1 million to what?
$450,000.
And that would also show up at the top end of the corner also.
Yes.
There's a motion before you. Is there any objections? Hearing no objections, that amendment has been adopted. Is there any further amendments? Representative Brown?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we report out with individual recommendations House Bill 341.
Is there any objections? Hearing none, that bill is moved out of committee. Thank you, Mr. Holt.
Thank you very much.
Representative Ellis, if you'll sit right there. The next bill we'll take up is 424, membership of the Board of Education. The sponsor, again, is Representative Ellis. It has a zero fiscal note. It's relating to the School Board of Education. This bill would allow representatives from the military reserve schools and the board student members to be a voting member of the Board of Education. As I said, this has a zero fiscal note. The expenses related to those members is already included in the State Board of Education budget, and the military covers the expenses of the military member. Also, you have in your packet, there's a letter of intent. Mr. Representative Ellis.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I do hope this legislation, I believe it is more simple and straightforward than the one before, and does have no physical impact. I'd like to let you know that I introduced this House Bill 424 at the request of a number of organizations, mainly student organizations and military members here in the state of Alaska. Currently, the State Board of Education consists of 7 voting members appointed by the governor for 5-year terms. The student and military representative members, however, are only advisory positions appointed by the State Board of Education for 1-year terms. House Bill 424 grants the student and military member voting privileges and makes their yearly appointments the responsibility of the governor. Representatives may be reappointed for successive terms if they remain qualified, and a Hess Committee substitute was adopted to ensure that the appointment process was constitutional. We've received the unanimous support from students, military, members of the Board of Education. There are several people here to testify that represent the groups affected, and I just think it would be a very positive signal to send to our young people, the students who serve on the board, and the military members who also are active participants in the public school system here in the state. So with that, I'll end my comments, and we'll hope to hear from other members who are here to testify.
Thank you. Are there any questions the bill sponsor before we go to public testimony? Representative Gall.
Are we still on teleconference? Yeah, just one question. Just so that I'll understand the concept behind the bill, I understand the part about the students. What's the difference between a student who goes to a military school, military reservation school, and any other student in a state-supported school? Why? I mean, there's no rural member, is there? there's no Juno member. I just don't understand why a particular class of parents should have a particular seat on the board. I'm not criticizing the notion. I just can't understand it without some explanation.
Well, actually, Representative Gull, the past experience has been that the governor makes his selections based on, you know, to some extent, well, to a large extent on qualifications, but also to some extent on geographic distribution of the members around the state and various interests that might be represented on the board and points of view. So that's one argument. Another is that the state of Alaska, our public school system, does have a special relationship with the military, not unlike other states that have large military populations. The military in Alaska constitutes 16% of our population. I couldn't give you the exact number of military schools or schools on military reservations, but the special relationship I refer to has to do with federal funds through the PL 874 mechanism. And as you're aware, the example that Representative Herman and Representative Larson refer to often of the ADAC schools and the special relationship between the state and the federal government, I think all those things argue for the military member having a voice. I've spoken to the student member and the military member of the Board of Education, and they really do feel not less welcome, but less like their comments and the deliberations of the board really count. And those members who have voting rights do actually take precedence in the discussion of education issues when the board meets. And I'd like to see everyone, if they're important enough to be appointed to the board, I think there should be voting privileges for all members. And of course, that wouldn't throw the board out of whack in terms of membership, in terms of what constitutes a quorum or changes the or would allow for tie votes. There are none of those considerations here, but I guess it's just a more or less a philosophical sort of issue.
One final question. Are there any other designated seats on the board?
Those are the only two that I'm aware of.
Well, I respectfully suggest there should be a native seat or a rural seat or something. No further questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Gull, that might be a good suggestion to pursue.
I guess I think that would be unconstitutional. And for that reason, I'm sorry. It just sort of caught me by surprise. I guess I didn't do my homework. It just seems like all the people who go to school in the state of Alaska, the PL 874 funds affect all the communities in my district. They don't get a designated seat. And I just can't help bringing it to the table that designating seats on the Board of Education seems to suggest a special privilege for a particular group, and I can't understand that. I appreciate the sincerity of the sponsor, and I mean no disrespect.
Mr. Hull, did you have a comment or response to Mr. Gall's question?
Mr. Chair, Representative
Gall, the seats are I see. Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to revise and correct my comments, if I may, and indicate that since there are designated seats, I now do understand the nature of the bill and have not made any comment on whether it was right or wrong. I understand now the process that would explain this as an equity issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Larson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do support the military representative having a vote because I think it's very important, not only in Anchorage and Fairbanks, but many other areas of Alaska. We have a large number of military students. The one big point, though, I do want to make, and I'm looking forward to work with the House HES Committee, is on a major question of whether ADAC should be one of our 55 school districts, where 99% of the students are here on a temporary basis for a short period of time. And the other 1% belong to the teachers who teach on that base. I really think we have to evaluate, you know, whether that is an Alaskan school district or whether we're supplementing the Department of Defense here.
There's no further questions of the bill sponsor. We do have some people signed up for public testimony. Representative Davis.
Yes, thank you. I had... saw a letter of intent earlier which addressed the concern of the Association of School councils, I believe, and also the military, there was a concern about the fact that that would change the way that they have been selected to be an appointment by the governor in, from what the current practice where they're selected by the, I believe the military people select them and the students collectively select their appointment. And I just wondered if you had any objections to having some kind of a letter which would give some direction to the governor in terms of how he would make his selections to these fill these vacancies.
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Davis, a letter of intent on that subject was discussed in the House HES Committee, and we did not act upon it. There is a concern there, as you mentioned, about the past method of selection, and it's one that we've received information from the governor's office that it would be in his intent to follow in the future in terms of future appointments to the board. As some of you may know, in the past has been a two-tiered selection process for the student and military member, where those names, three names would come forward. The board would review those, review the qualifications of the nominees, and then submit names onto the governor for his appointment. And that's the way that we would hope to operate in the future. The House HES Committee put that on the record, that concern, but didn't see a compelling need for a letter of intent. But I would defer to the wisdom of this group on that point.
We're seeing less wisdom in letters of intent all the time.
But that was something that the, if I could clarify, that was something that the military people were concerned about, as well as the students, of having some kind of a intent language in the legislation. Is that correct?
I don't remember a specific request from anyone to have a specific letter of intent. Like I said before, it is a concern, and I'm fully confident that the governor will, that the past practice will continue, that the military and student members will be reviewed, those nominees will be checked for their qualifications,
Mr. Chairman, I'll just wait and listen to the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ellis. Crispian Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Crispian Smith, and I'm the Vice President of AUSOG, the Alaska Association of School Governments. In June of last year, the idea of having a voting student member and military member was raised at a State Board of Education retreat. Boys State 87, Girls State 87, and AUSOG have all passed resolutions supporting the idea of a voting student member for the following reasons. Past experience has shown that the student advisory members possess sufficient levels of maturity and competence to handle the responsibility of voting. Students are aware of problems and situations in the educational system that adults may not immediately be cognizant of. Other states, including California and Massachusetts, have had favorable results with having a voting student member on their state boards of education. In January, I talked with Representative Ellis about introducing legislation, and he, with eight other co-sponsors, has done that. And at the January State Board of Education meeting, the board voted unanimously to support this bill. The students are the direct consumers of the educational system in Alaska. It only seems logical that we should have a vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Are there any questions of the witness?
Yeah, one.
Representative Larson.
Yeah, the student member is a member for 1 year. And do you feel comfortable then that within that short period of time that the student member will be able to bring themselves up to par in relation to curriculum, funding, and all of the other requirements of the board? Or are they just going to be a yes vote that will follow someone else's lead?
The student is selected at the way the system is presently set up, the student is selected at the fall conference and at the fall conference of AUSOG. In the spring, the board interviews them, and they don't, if I remember correctly, they do not start their term until the following September. I'm not sure, but they do have that period of time after they're chosen by the board. There's a retreat, the retreat I spoke of. There's a retreat that they go to, and they do immerse themselves for a week in the happenings of the board. So I suppose in that amount of time from the January, or from the fall conference up until June, and when they start in September, if I'm correct, they have that amount of time to come up to par on the issues.
Thank you. They're come up to par faster than most of us adults do then.